You're listening to In His Sign Catholic Radio on WTMR 800, Camden, Philadelphia.
Do not let your hearts be troubled or afraid. Dear brothers and sisters, the Holy Spirit is with you.
I'm Kathleen McCarthy, and you're listening to What the World Needs Now, empowered by the Holy Spirit, bringing the fire of God's love to the world. I invite you to join me in this hour of God's healing power. Call and join us in conversation and prayer. Remember, what the world needs now is God, and God is love.
And good evening, and welcome to What the World Needs Now. Your host, Ken Johnston. And, you know, what Kathleen says there in the intro is absolutely needed today, and that is love. And I want to praise and thank God for all of our listeners, and thank you for all that you do for us here at In His Sign Catholic Radio Apostolate. You've managed to keep us on the air for some 40 years now and allow us to bring you great shows like today's. And I usually get excited about these shows that I have on Wednesday, especially in this hour where I get to interview somebody. And there's some weeks that I get even more excited than others, and today is one of those days. Today I'm joined by Eric Sammons, and he's written a book called Deadly Indifference, How the Church Lost Her Mission and How We Can Reclaim It. Eric is the editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine and the author of several books, including The Old Evangelization, How to Spread the Faith Like Jesus Did, in a high school textbook on ecumenism and interreligious dialogue. He holds a degree in systems analysis with a concentration in economics from Miami University in Ohio, where he was received into the Catholic Church in 1993. He earned a Master of Theology degree from Franciscan University and has worked for decades in Catholic evangelization at the individual, parish, and diocesan levels. Married to Susan and has seven children, and they live in Ohio. So, Eric, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having me today.
And, we have something in common, too. We're both married to Susans.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I will say my wife pronounces her name Suzanne.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's right, a Z, Suzanne. Very good. We only had a few seconds to chat before the show started, and I mentioned to you that I'd started to look at the book, and it's spot on in what we're seeing today, how few people are in the pews, not compared to just pre-pandemic days, but, you know, going back to, when I was a kid. And, always looking for, to put your finger on a reason, why that has happened. And I think in looking at your book, you put your finger right on it and can really point out to us where that may have been coming from. And just before we I bring you in here, the other thing is, I love converts to the faith. I really do. I'm a cradle Catholic, born in 61, went through 12 years of Catholic school, and for a lot of years took my faith for granted. And when people come into the church, especially from the evangelical side, the Scott Hahns, the Jeff Cavins, yourself, and you prove to us more or less that we are the one true faith. that you've been on the other side, if you will, and you had this longing for the truth, and you become Catholic. And I think it reaffirms for me and many others that that we are in the right spot. So I want to thank you for answering the call to come into the church, even though it may not be everything it's cracked up to be in these days. But it's certainly all the work that you do. I get the daily emails from Crisis and the work that goes on there to keep us up to date as to what's going on with our faith around the world. So thank you for that as well.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. And it really, it kind of gets to the point, your first point, my conversion, is that what I think is one of the big reasons why the Catholic Church is in decline, just demographically, it's just a fact, in the modern world, is that Catholics just simply don't believe it's important to be Catholic anymore. And as a convert, of course, I made the decision to become Catholic because I realized it was what Jesus was calling me to do, and it's the one true faith, and my salvation would depend upon it. And too often, though, today, a lot of Catholics just don't think it really matters what religion you are. It's like a personal preference, like choosing your favorite ice cream flavor or something like that. But ultimately, though, what religion you are is the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as Catholics, we know that the Catholic Church is the one true faith, and that our Lord is calling everybody, every single human being who's ever lived, to be Catholic. And so we have to reclaim that on some level and recognize that, because when you don't, just think about any organization, it doesn't matter it's a religion or not. If any organization, if members don't think it's important to be a member, well, two things are going to happen. The first one is they're not going to invite anybody else to become members because they don't think it really matters. And secondly, if it becomes at all difficult to be a member, they're going to leave, because if it doesn't matter, don't go through the tough stuff. And we see that in the Catholic Church, that we've seen a complete collapse in missionary activity. We don't have Catholics going around the world anymore and preaching the Catholic faith and the gospel and bringing people to Christ in the Catholic Church. That just is almost completely dried up. And secondly, we see so many people leaving, and a lot of times it has to do with the fact that it's just easier, they think in their minds, to not be Catholic. You don't have to worry about the moral teachings. You don't have to worry about the going to Mass or going to confession and things like that. And so when things get a bit difficult, if it doesn't really matter to be Catholic, well, just stop being Catholic. So I really feel like that's a core issue for the reason why we've had such a decline, and because I think it would happen with any organization, but, you know, it's very sad that's happened with the one true faith, the Catholic Church.
Yeah, and I think that right at the outset of the book, you know, one of the things that all organizations have is a mission, right? And any successful organization's has a mission or a mission statement and what they're going to do. And, you know, that mission sets the tone for, like you said, inviting other people and wanting to, get them involved in whatever your mission is. And I can see clearly now, I couldn't see it last week, but I can see it clearly now of how the church has, lost that claim and not given up perhaps on the mission, but certainly don't emphasize it.
Yeah, I mean, it's forgotten is probably the best way to put it, because Obviously the church always has her mission, and her mission is the salvation of souls. That's given to her by Christ. She can't lose it in the sense of the church can't lose it. But what can happen is the members of the church can forget about it, and we lose it. We misplace it. And so that driving force of the church, of everything the church does, and when I say the church, I mean from the individual Catholic to the parish, to the diocese, to the universal church, everything needs to be directed towards that mission of salvation of souls. I think we see it most clearly at the parish level, because for most Catholics, their experience of Catholicism is at the parish. Mm. And so we see this with parishes that in practice become almost more just like social clubs. They're like the Elks Club or something like that, where they have lots of activities, lots of ways for people to get together. But there isn't this driving force of, why are we doing this? Why does this parish exist? And it exists for the salvation of souls, because that's the key thing about parishes. It actually can offer something that no other organization on earth can offer, and that is the sacraments and that is the that is salvation through the sacraments. And so if you forget about that and you become more about, okay, let's have a sports club that ends up having games on Sundays, it does maybe a festival that to raise money, but the festival has a lot of immoral stuff going on at it, or even as benign as having book clubs that don't really do anything other than have a social purpose. They might be like, I know of a Catholic parish that one time their book club did the Da Vinci Code, which for those who aren't familiar with that book, it's a very anti-Catholic book of fiction from about 15, 20 years ago. I mean, what is the purpose there? I mean, you're not leading people to salvation. So at the parish level particularly, everything should be directed towards the salvation of souls. But it's true for diocese and the church in general. I mean, a lot of times we see the purpose of the church is to make this world a better place. That's not the purpose of the church. It's the corollary. If we all were Catholic and practicing our faith, the world would be a better place, better place. We'd still have sin, but we'd be a lot better off than we are now. But that's not what the church's primary reason to exist is. It's to save souls, and by saving them, people will live better lives, and they will be happier on this earth. But all these extraneous things, where I'm not saying they all should be abandoned, because some of them might, like I could see, like, you know, for example, a parish picnic doesn't seem like it's directed towards salvation souls, but if it's building the community in a way that leads them to become better Catholics, then yeah, that can be, you know, justified. But the point is like the parish priests and the lay people who are helping run the parish, their thoughts should be, okay, does this activity, does this, whatever the parish doing, is it directed towards the salvation of souls? And truthfully, that's our life as Catholics too. When we practice faith, we should be thinking that, and the diocese and the Vatican. So that's the point, is a good organization has a mission, it's very clear, and everybody is directed towards it.
And it seems from your writing that the mission was pretty clear, maybe up until 100 years ago. I like the way you lay out, you know, it's council after council, starting with the apostles and the church fathers, you know, right up until perhaps the beginning of the 20th century, into the middle of the century, that was the focus, that was the mission. You know, so I'm a product of the 60s, right? So, and the ecumenism and everything else. And it was like, now I have EENS like burned into my brain now, which is extra ecclesium nulla salus. Outside of the church, there's no salvation. And that was like, you know, something that we were supposed to get rid of. Like, that's not true. Anybody can get into heaven. We don't, you know, the Catholic Church doesn't have the keys to the gate to say who gets in and who gets, you know, and who doesn't. And, you know, it's all part of this ecumenism. And you talk about, I think, is religious pluralists, where, you know, we believe that all the religions are equal, and, you know, you can pick whatever flavor you want, you know, and still achieve salvation. And I think, to some degree, not that whole that phrase is true, but, you know, even with our catechism, you know, people that aren't Catholic may get into heaven, absolutely, especially those that haven't been evangelized, but we are the one Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. We're the church that Jesus Christ gave the keys to. And, you know, I'm starting to learn about it. Like I said, I haven't finished the book, but, you know, somewhere along the way, we've lost that. And I don't know if part of it is fear, part of it's the evil one. I'm sure it's a combination of things.
Right.
But, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's, you know, every time in the church has been full of saints and sinners, there's always been problems here and there. But one thing that was true before the 1960s or so, throughout since the first century, is the church was clear about what its purpose was. And so a Catholic could be ignoring it or denying it, but they couldn't say they weren't being told, because the church is very clear that we're the one true church. You need to become Catholic to be saved. And so there was no, you couldn't feign ignorance if you're part of the Catholic Church. if you're practicing. But now, however, we've downplayed that so much, we've to the point where people just simply deny it. They simply don't believe it anymore. And that's kind of one of the main points of my book, is that there's been this big shift in emphasis that started in the 1960s, where they didn't deny, they didn't all of a sudden, it's not like anybody in the Catholic Church, like the Pope or any bishops or the Vatican II or anything like that, ever said, okay, we don't believe outside the church there's no salvation anymore. Nobody ever said that. No church leaders said that. But what they did was they downplayed it so much, and they emphasized so much the loopholes, so to speak, the ways that a non-Catholic could be saved, which are extraordinary. They're extraordinary means, meaning they're not the ordinary means, and so we can't presume upon them for anybody. They started emphasizing those so much that people in practice just started thinking, okay, well, anybody can be saved no matter what their religion is. As long as they're a decent person, God's going to save them. And so you see how this shift of emphasis led to actually heretical views, because it's for a Catholic to believe that other religions can be the means of salvation, that's actually heresy according to the Catholic Church. And so it's not like the bishop said, okay, you start believing this now. Instead, they just downplay it so much that the average Catholic in the pews, they hear the message that, oh, Islam is just as good as us, or Protestantism is just as good as us, or whatever the case may be, and they start believe it, and they start saying, well, it doesn't matter what religion you are. So it's kind of the reasons, you know, like you said, is it fear? Is it the evil one? It definitely is those two things. I do think there was an effort where the leaders in the church, starting in the 1960s, really wanted to just be accepted by the world. They didn't want to seem different. Mm. And so that's why they got involved in things like humanism, interreligious dialogue, and really they refused to ever say anything negative about another religion. They wouldn't say, oh, this is erroneous what these people teach. They just said, oh, yeah, here's what we have in common. And I think it was a matter of desire to be accepted by the world. And I think some of that was done with good intentions. I think some people probably have bad intentions, but I think some of the people who did that, they were thinking, oh, if the world accepts us, then they'll want to become Catholic. But the reality is that doesn't make any sense, first of all. Because if I just say, you're fine the way you are, we're just like you, well, why would I want to change anything? I'm fine the way I am. And secondly, we just know it's proven it doesn't work, because we can just see the numbers. We can just see how that's everybody who does that. Because the mainline Protestant denominations did the same thing as well. They start downplaying any differences, and they start saying, oh, it doesn't really matter. And they've lost members like crazy, too. So it's a proven that it's a failed methodology, whether or not they had good intention originally or not. But that's why we need to get away from it. We need to really emphasize, okay, here's how we're different. Here's how we're distinct from the world. Here's why it matters to be Catholic. It's not just an optional thing, but it's a necessary thing. We need to start emphasizing that again.
Yeah. And you point out the numbers in the appendix in the back, and I shouldn't say I was flabbergasted, but I knew it was bad, but I didn't know it was this bad. So 1970, there's over a million baptisms. 2019, 582,000. So down by almost 50%, 46.5%.
And what's amazing is, if you look at the numbers even more closely, there's just a huge drop. There's a big drop starting in 1970, and then it kind of levels out from about 75 to about 2000. But starting the year 2000, and a lot of different numbers back this up, we've seen a huge drop, where we're not just talking about baptisms, we're talking about confirmations, marriages, everything you can, every demographic, there's been a huge drop. And, you know, it just, the fact is that the modern world is just saying it's not important to be Catholic, and Catholics and non-Catholics are saying that, and they're leaving in droves, because we're not giving them anything distinctive. We're not giving them any reason to come. I mean, if we're just saying we're like everybody else, well, I don't need to change. So that's really, the numbers just are very heartbreaking, because they're not just numbers. Those are real people, real people who have decided to leave the Catholic Church or not become Catholic. And that's, every single one of those is a soul who needs to be Catholic.
Yeah, it's interesting. We've never talked before, never met before. My background, is being in recovery from addiction and 30 years worth almost, and being away from the church and coming back. And, I was set on fire around the same time that you came in back in 93 when I made a retreat. And, I've come to believe, and I say it to people all the time, everybody's Catholic. There's just a lot of people that don't know it yet. And, to your point, everything that the church has to offer, which is distinct from any other religion, and especially with our Protestant brothers and sisters, the seven sacraments, especially the Holy Eucharist, and as you said, that these are the keys, especially beginning with baptism, are the keys to salvation, and to come to understand that it is all been watered down to the point where people want to say that no faith is greater than any other, that we're all on equal ground here, is so far from the truth. And and I think it's gotten to the point now where even the laity, they want to do something. They want to they probably don't know the reason why we are where we are, and then even if we do, well, then how do we reverse it? And so it's one of the beauties of your book, and I think you go on to explain how we get it back. But to understand what that mission is, especially somebody like yourself that came into the faith, how do we reclaim that? How do we at least start to get back on track, especially if we're in a parish or a diocese where that's not the emphasis.
Right. And that's the case for a lot of people, unfortunately. I think one thing is on the parish level, I do think that you should make sure your parish is taking the faith seriously. And if it's not, and you don't think you can do anything about it, you should look elsewhere for another parish, obviously not a Catholic parish, that takes it seriously, takes the faith seriously. And I think the way we start reclaiming it is twofold. The first one I've already said, and that is we make our message distinctive. We make it very clear the importance of the Catholic Church, that we are the one true faith. We're not apologetic about that. There's this idea that you're triumphalistic if you say that, and that's not the case. We're not saying this out of pride, like we had anything to do with it. I had nothing to do with the Catholic Church being founded. So when I say it's the one true faith and it's the way to salvation, that's not a prideful statement, because I had, like I said, I'm not the one who established the Catholic Church. But then also, I think we just need to really take our faith seriously. I think, and what I mean by that is, like, everything that we do we really look at the Catholic faith as the most important thing and as something we really believe? And at the parish level, you see this a lot of times where it just seems like it's happy hour when you go to Mass, and people are talking beforehand and chatting afterwards in the nave and sanctuary, and the music isn't really that serious. The architecture is such that it looks just like any other building. And of course, obviously, we can't change the architecture of a parish. But the point is that we are sending this message that we don't really think it's that important, the faith. And so I think that's a key point, is that we take our faith very seriously. And we make sure it's very distinctive from the world. We don't want to be like this world. This world is falling apart.
That's right.
And we don't want anything. We don't want to be anything like it. The whole idea of let's make Mass relevant or something like that. It's like, I don't want it to be like the rest of the world. I want it to be different and distinctively different. That's what I think attracts people who recognize how fallen our world is.
Amen. I see it in even some organizations that I belong to. I just walked away from one after 9 years, and part of it was that they lost their mission, perhaps, or their mission was no longer, even though it was a Catholic organization, is no longer compatible with the mission. That doesn't seem to be the primary focus. They'd rather get involved in politics and some of the other stuff that's going on in this world. And you made that point earlier that when you know, you don't offer that, that's when, you know, people stop inviting people. So I stopped inviting people a few years ago because I didn't quite understand where it was headed. And then once I did, that's when I finally left. And so it, as we're talking, I mean, the light bulbs are just going off all over the place that it seems so simple. And yet it's going to be a huge task, I think, to get folks back on board. It's almost as though we've been brainwashed, if you will.
Yeah.
And it's been going on. We're in at least the second generation now of people that were, you know, raised in a Catholic faith in our Catholic schools, which were, at least here in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, you know, you couldn't go 2 miles without, you know, passing a Catholic grade school or Catholic high school. And today, one by one, they're closing up. And to your point, if we're not teaching why they're distinct from our public schools, you know, what are we teaching our kids and adolescents in Catholic school that's any different than what's being taught in a public school? And so I think finances also come into that and obviously other things. But
it is amazing, though, because, you know, it's simple, but it's not easy because being distinctive, it will cause controversy. There's no question about that. And it's difficult sometimes to make that jump where you're different from everybody else. But what we have is, you know, a parish thinks a lot of times might think like, oh, you know, we need to reach out to people. And they do things like, oh, let's have a recycling program. That'll, like, get people interested or whatever. Or just stuff that's like this worldly that any place could do. Like, that will make us more relevant. They'll make us seem environmentally friendly or whatever. But it's like, wait a minute. We have literally the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ that can be received at our parish. That should be, first of all, the sales point, so to speak, to use a kind of crude language. But we have baptism, which can put you into the family of God. That's what we should be really promoting. And yes, because this world is very fallen and it's going downhill, there will be a lot of people who reject that. But what will happen is those who are open to the fullness of the faith, they will embrace it. But those people don't even realize, like, I'm thinking of, like, for example, your strong evangelical Protestant Christian who loves Jesus, loves the faith, thinks it's, you know, takes it very seriously. Well, he looks, and I know, let me tell you, I can tell you from experience, he looks over at the Catholic Church and says, those guys, they're a bunch of yahoos. They're not really taking anything Jesus seriously because they see how people, Catholics, are living. They see how the parishes aren't really proclaiming the faith, and they have no interest. But that's the type of person that should be number one on our list to bring into the Catholic Church, because they already have a love for Jesus Christ. They always they already take their faith seriously. That's who we want. But we turn them away when we, you know, when our parish bulletins, like I said, is like focusing more on let's promote our latest recycling drive rather than the fact that Jesus is here. You know, that's the kind of thing, practically speaking, that is causing, you know, losing us converts and causing other people to go away.
Yeah. As you're saying that, I'm thinking that it was Gandhi, I think, that said that, you know, he'd convert if he could find somebody that actually lived the life. But it brings us just about to the bottom of the hour. Before we broach another topic here, how about if we take a break now, Eric? It'll just be a couple minutes, and then we'll come back to it. Okay. For our listeners, Eric's, I think, going to stay till the end of the hour, as long as we have more to talk about. So you're going to want to stick around. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is Father Dermot Roach of the SMA Fathers, the African Missions in Boston. From the first time I spoke to Kathleen, I recognized the special presence of the Holy Spirit in her. Kathleen exudes a confidence, joy, and truly a holy boldness in her unique style of evangelization. I've been blessed being part of her retreats, her preaching, and her teaching, especially sharing the Word of God with her on Thursday afternoons on The Holy Spirit is With You. The many gifts that Kathleen shares with us in ministry are a testament of her humble surrender to God's will and mission for the church. She's a simple instrument, becoming Christ's eyes of compassion, Christ's feet walking in humility and goodness, and Christ's hands of healing and blessing the wounded, the lonely, and lost souls on this earth.
We thank God for our one, holy, Catholic, and Apostolic Church, where Jesus remains present to us until the end of the age, in word and in sacrament. Catholic Radio shares in the ministry of the Church to proclaim the gospel to the ends of the earth. And in his sign, Catholic Radio, has been doing so for over 30 years. Kathleen McCarthy and In His Sign have been empowered by the Holy Spirit to bring the fire of God's healing love to the world through Catholic Radio and the Internet. With God's grace, His word goes out, healing hearts and transforming lives. In His Sign proclaims the culture of life loud and clear in a culture of death. The ministry's mission is to evangelize, catechize, and to be a voice for those who have no voice, proclaiming the truth that will set all people free. To our faithful family and friends who stand with us, thank you for being missionaries with us by supporting In His Sign Catholic Radio. Without your monthly support of prayer and financial giving, our mission would not be able to continue. Our mission voice would be silenced. To our new listeners, please prayerfully consider joining our monthly circle of family and friends by partnering with us financially each month. All donations are completely tax deductible and go directly to our daily expenses, like the purchase of radio airtime and keeping the lights on. Kathleen McCarthy and all of the staff at In His Sign, except Kathleen's administrator, donate all of their time and talent on a volunteer basis at no expense to the ministry. Donations to In His Sign Catholic Radio may be sent to 136 Garrett Avenue, Rosemont, PA 19010, or you can donate securely at inhissign.com. Remember, without your prayers and financial support, our mission voice will be silenced.
And welcome back to What the World Needs Now. Your host, Ken Johnston. And again, just like Dennis mentions in the message there, praise and thank God for all of our listeners for all that you do for us that allows us to bring you shows like today's. Our guest today is Eric Sammons, and the book we've been talking about is Deadly Indifference, How the Church Lost Her Mission and How We Can Reclaim It. It's published through Crisis Magazine, but I guess in cooperation with Sophia Institute. So you can certainly buy the book online at sophiainstitute.com. I'm sure you can pick it up at Catholic retailers as well. If they don't have it in stock, be sure to ask for it, and I'm sure that they can get it for you relatively quickly. So, Eric, you mentioned before we went to the break about, you know, the people in the faith, and I guess it would, you know, more or less be the priests and bishops and maybe even the Pope wanting to be accepted and not, you know, confronted all the time on their Catholic beliefs, on the Catholic faith. And the line that kept running through my mind as you were saying it is comes from my good friend Father McKay, you know, who says if you want to follow Christ, you got to look good wearing wood. That, you know, if Christ himself was persecuted, we're going to be persecuted. Christ told us that. And so to, you know, we can't look for that easy way out. We're not going to be accepted by all people in all places. Because of our beliefs, we may be mocked, especially in this culture that we live in today, where, you know, having a faith in God is seen as a weakness. You know, it's a crutch. You know, we should be able to do everything on our own, and it's the furthest thing from the truth, isn't it?
It really is. It's interesting because, you know, our faith, if you look at the history of Catholicism, there's a lot of suffering there, a lot of sacrifices there, a lot of willingness to stand up to a lot of totalitarian regimes, to other religions and whatnot, enduring persecution, enduring even to the point of martyrdom. I mean, mm-hmm. Look at, for example, the missionary saints who came to our shores and preached to the Native Americans, like a St. Isaac Jogues or something like that, where essentially he was willing to do anything to bring the gospel, to bring Catholicism to the people here. And so the idea that we're just kind of afraid that we won't be liked if we say the hard teachings of the church, if we show how we're distinctive, it's a little bit, it really is sad because, I mean, our forefathers and foremothers in the faith, they did so much that we'd be Catholic today. I mean, we wouldn't be Catholic today if not for the sacrifices of those who came before us. So we need to be willing to sacrifice, which, and honestly, it just includes basically social persecution and social rejection. We're not even talking about martyrdom these days. We need to be able to endure that so that we can pass the faith on to future generations, because as we're seeing, you know, like with the decrease in baptisms and all that, we're not passing it on. And it takes sacrifice. It takes hardship to really pass the faith on.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm guilty of what I'm about to share here is that, you know, so often we hear in these days that, you know, Jesus also said that, you know, the gates of hell are not going to not prevail against the church. So, you know, most of us take that as, well, the Catholic Church is going to go on and exist forever, or at least until the end of the world when we, you know, we're all called home once and for all to heaven. And I think that, and I can say this personally, sometimes I use that as a means or a way of saying, well, God's going to take care of it. I don't have to do it. I'm just going to sit back and wait and see what God's going to do to fix all this. Right. And, you know, I've had other guests on, and not that I don't take it any lighter after reading your book, but like talking about the illumination of conscience and the second Pentecost and so I know people that's what they're praying for, that they're hoping, you know, God's going to, you know, do this mighty deed that all at once is going to bring about these huge conversions. But in the meantime, there's things that we can do. And when I read what you wrote about Henry VIII and the Muslims in Northern Africa, right in the introduction, you know, we think that the Catholic Church can never be wiped out. And yet Henry VIII managed to all but wipe it out in England. That the Muslims have wiped it out in Northern Africa. And for us to think that something like that can't happen here in the United States, after, you know, seeing just those two examples, and I'm sure we've seen it in other places, that, you know, we can't take this for granted anymore.
Yeah, and that's a key point. It's like I've seen that phenomenon too, where Catholics can, and I'm sure I've done it myself, where we kind of rest on the fact that, well, God will make sure we don't disappear. Well, the promise that the church will always endure is a true divine promise, and so we don't deny that. But there's no promises how big the church is going to be.
Right.
I mean, after all, in the upper room at Pentecost, it's not like there was more than maybe 30 or 40 people there or something like that. And so there's no guarantee we won't be back down to that size. And just history has shown, like you said, that you mentioned, there's been times where a church has been completely wiped, the Catholic presence has been completely wiped out of a geographic area. So it doesn't go against Christ's promises if nobody in America was Catholic. That would, you know, because that's just not part of the promise. It's not that everywhere in the world will be Catholic, but just that there will be a church. And then the second thing is, though, if you look at the history of how God has worked in the church, it's through people. It's through our work. I mean, that's how he does it, is like he uses us. That's the whole point of Catholicism, the incarnation. He works through man. He works through a physical, the material world. So if we just sit back and do nothing, well, we're going to suffer the consequences for that. And we do it based on with prayer and fasting behind it. But we're the ones who actually have, that God is going to use to make these things, to bring about a revival in the church and bring about conversions.
Yeah. So we've talked about some darkness, if you will, and you know, we definitely the decline. And anybody that's not seeing it, and I have a good friend that I'm sure is listening. That's going to text me either before the show's over or as soon as it's. He's actually texted me 10 minutes ago that his parish is booming. He's in a traditional Latin mass where even during the pandemic the doors were burgeoning with people. That they're looking for another church because they're running out of room where they are. So it's not everywhere, but it is in a lot of places. My home parish, it's almost heartbreaking now to go on a Sunday where, you know, 10, 15 years ago, the church was, I wouldn't say it was full, but it was probably 75%. And I was there for Mass this past Sunday, and if it was 15% full, it'd be a lot. And so where do we go from here?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting what your friend's experience, because I actually had the same experience. I go to a traditional Latin Mass parish, and we're also booming, and especially through COVID and everything. So there are pockets out there. And I think that's what we should look at, though. Where is the church booming? Where are parishes booming? And what are they doing that to make that happen? Like, learn from them. So like in the example of the traditional Latin Mass parishes, I really think it's because they're taking this the faith very seriously. You walk in, you immediately know, wow, this is very distinctive. First of all, obviously, anybody who's gone to traditional Latin Mass knows how distinctive it is. It's nothing like the world, surrounding world. It doesn't try to be. It kind of glories in the fact that it's not like the surrounding world. So that's partly, and also you have very much a seriousness of the faith, and that's attracting people. And so that's what, you know, that's where we can see the growth, and that's where we see some good pockets of increase. And the same thing is true, for example, with religious orders. If you look at the religious orders that are very serious about their faith, very orthodox, so they, you know, they wear their habits, their cassocks, whatever the case may be, and they take very seriously the faith, and they put it, the salvation soul above everything else. They're the ones that are growing. The religious orders that kind of embrace the worldly attitude, they started wearing like regular clothes. They started just talking about things like climate change or whatever. They're the ones that are dying out. And so it just shows that, you know, God still is at work in the church. I mean, I believe that wholeheartedly. I see it all the time, but it's in small pockets right now. You know, like I said, God doesn't work against us. You know, he allows us free will. And so if we don't do these things, then yeah, the church is going to continue to decline, because you just can't say, you know, if you're in a parish that's doing well, God bless you. That's great. I mean, I am, but you can't be myopic and real and think that that's the state of the entire church, because the numbers just don't lie. And the fact of the matter is most parishes are dying out. Dioceses are, in most places in America, they're trying to figure out how to consolidate parishes, you know, close parishes, bring priests to go through more than one parish, all these type of things that are just signs of decline. And we have to face that reality head on, can't shy from it, but then also look at where the pockets of growth are and really embrace what's working in other places.
And this might be a hot topic, it may not. In order to look at those other places, right? So you mentioned, we're talking about the traditional Latin Mass, and you know, the burgeoning numbers there, especially young people that are finding their way there, and yet the leadership of the church doesn't seem to embrace that. And I'm basing that on articles I see on your own website with Crisis right. Magazine and what have you, that there's actually maybe a force in play that's actually pushing in the opposite direction.
That's right. It boggles the mind when you think about it, because it's like, okay, so if I'm CEO of a company that has 10 divisions and 9 divisions are doing terrible and one has great sales, which one am I going to figure out what they're doing right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to the one that's doing great. And I'm telling the other 9 people, other 9 division directors, hey, let's talk to this guy and let's start to adapt some of his success to these other divisions. That's what I do. I mean, that just makes sense. And so to me, if I'm, you know, thank the Lord I'm not, but if I was, you know, up high level in the Catholic Church, that's what I'd be doing. Say, okay, what's working? The problem though is there's a real ideology that a lot of church leaders, I think, have embraced a very specific way to look at the Catholic faith in this kind of 1960s, 1970s view where we just get along with everybody, we're accepted by everybody, we're not much different than anybody else. And they're invested in that. And that's their whole view of the Catholic faith. And so to go against that, I think they feel it takes a lot of humility. I mean, ultimately, that's what it takes. It takes humility to say, you know, we haven't been doing a great job. Because a good leader, a good CEO, if his company's failing, if he doubles down on what he's doing, he's not a very good CEO. Instead, what he says in humility, you know, what I've been doing isn't working. I need to look elsewhere. I need to see where it is working. And in my opinion, that's exactly what, you know, bishops and our popes should be doing, is saying, okay, it's these traditional parishes, traditional orders that are thriving now. People are flocking to them. Let's look at their model and try to figure out what they're doing right and start to emulate it. And so I think that's – but again, you know, why they don't do that I think is probably mostly just ideology. They don't really want to accept that the methods they've used for the past 60 years just don't work. Yeah. Because they've invested so much into them. It's like the sunk cost fallacy. You know, it's like, yeah, you've invested a lot of money in this, but if it's, you don't just keep on investing if you know it's a failed venture. And so that's why I feel like we have a little bit of that here, where it's like the way we've been doing it clearly isn't working. So what's it hurt to try something else? And in my mind, what's it hurt to try the things that we know for a fact worked in the past? It's not like men and women are so fundamentally different today. So let's go ahead and try what's happened in the past. In fact, my last book before Deadly Indifference was on the old evangelization. And that was kind of the point of it. It was like, hey, let's look back at how we evangelized all those centuries before people started leaving, when people were joining the church. And let's try to take some of those models and use those. But it does take humility to recognize that the path we've been going down is not working.
Yeah, and I think maybe we had gotten to a point, and I remember years ago, and I think you may have been involved with Catholic Answers, but Rosalind Moss, before she started her Order of Sisters, I had her in my parish, and we got talking about some of the things that we're talking about today, and somebody out of the blue asked her a question about, you know, greeters, having people greet you at the door, and you know, she mentioned it, and I hadn't thought about it, but probably back in the 40s and 50s, at the height of Catholicism, perhaps in the United States, like the neighborhood that I was born and raised in, a majority of my neighbors were Catholic. So we weren't going to church to be with other Catholics. We lived with them day in and day out. As kids, we played together. Our mothers talked over the fence together, and because they, you know, the majority were Catholic, we didn't have to evangelize, right? And now that we're seeing the decline, so the old evangelization, I'm not sure when the laity necessarily ever had to evangelize, that it was, you know, we had thousands and thousands, maybe millions at one time of priests and religious that were doing it for us. But now, between the decline in numbers totally, the significant decline in the number of priests and religious, and the lack of experience that the laity has when it comes to evangelization, it just seems like we've reached a tipping point where we may finally be forced to evangelize if we're going to save our church.
Right, and the truth is that, you know, we are a hierarchical church. We have priests, we have bishops, we have sisters as well, and brothers, religious brothers and sisters. And their primary duty is to to especially priests, to bring the sacraments, to evangelize, to try to reach out to everybody they can. The laity's job of evangelization is a little bit different, because obviously we can't bring the sacraments to the people. What our duty is to really evangelize in our, what I call like our sphere of influence, that the people that we come in contact with every day or regularly, whether it be in our family, in our neighborhood, in our work, whatever the case may be, we run into people all the time, and we're the people we have an influence over. We might not even realize it. And those are the people we're supposed to evangelize, are the people that are around us. Like, you know, the priests, missionary priests who go to a different, you know, country and stuff like that, which unfortunately we just have so few of now, that's needed as well. But our duty is really the people around us that we're evangelizing them on some level and letting them know how important it is to be Catholic. That's what I think that's been the lay's duty always.
Yeah.
But it's more needed now when we don't have the priests and the sisters and everybody out available to do it.
Yeah. And in order to do that, we need to be living out our faith ourselves.
Absolutely.
And you know, a lot of us don't do it perfectly. You know, some may do it better than others. And part of the issue, obviously, the uphill battle we fight is that the press loves to point out all the flaws, not necessarily with the Catholic Church, but the individuals in it. And hold them up as examples, perhaps, of you know, the worst of what the church has to offer, which makes it even more difficult. But I think as a lady, I think you know, as Saint Francis said, preach the gospel often, sometimes use words. That we need to be prayed up and living a Catholic life, a Christian life, and that people will recognize that, they'll know it. Without us having to say anything.
Right. And I think also that part of this is that we need to hold up a high ideal. The problem is we're lowering our standards and saying this action is okay, this is okay, you know, divorce is okay, abortion is not that bad, all these contraception is okay, all that stuff. But we need to hold up a high ideal, because what we do is, the church should do, is it holds up a very high ideal. But then when people fall short of it, which we all do, we reach down and pick them up.
That's right.
But we don't lower the ideal. We don't lower that bar. Instead, we help people up so they can reach it. That's what we should be doing. So this idea, and this is kind of like the whole idea of what I'm saying in the book with indifference, is we just act like it doesn't really matter how you live. So even if you're living in a way that's contrary to the church's teaching, contrary to what the church says is true, We act like, oh, let's just lower the church's standards so you'll feel better. No, what we do is we say that the standard is still there. We still believe that. That is the way the Lord wants you to live. But if you fall short of it, okay, well, then we're going to work. We're going to help you. We're going to pick you up. We're going to reach down, like through the sacrament of confession or whatever the case may be, and we're going to help you get back up and strive for that ideal again.
Very good. We got about 5 minutes left, Eric. Again, our guest today has been Eric Sammons. The book we're talking about is Deadly Indifference, How the Church Lost Her Mission and How We Can Reclaim It. The foreword's in there is excellent by Bishop Athanasius Schneider. And again, you can pick it up at the Sophia Institute's website or any of our, especially locally here in Philadelphia, or Catholic shop. If they don't have it in stock, be sure to ask them to get it for you. I'm sure that they can do that. So I think we've covered a lot that was in the book. Obviously, there's a whole lot more to it, and I certainly encourage people to pick it up. But in the last couple of minutes here, Eric, is there anything we haven't covered that we want to get across to our listeners?
Yeah, I just want to encourage Catholics to really understand our faith when it comes to this teaching of outside the church, there is no salvation. When we say that, I understand that most people, they're going to have their initial reaction would be like, but what about, meaning like, what about the people who maybe in Africa have never heard of Jesus Christ? Or what about people who lived in the New World before the advent of the missionaries, things like that, Native Americans? What about all these people? But really, that shows a misunderstanding of the way we should be thinking about it. We have been given, through grace, through the church, we've been given the means that we're promised salvation. And that is, we're baptized in the Catholic Church, or, you know, and then we live a Catholic life through the sacraments of confession, communion, prayer life, doing the things that the church says we should do, we are guaranteed that we will be saved if we do those things, if we believe and we do those things. And so that's what we should be telling people. That should be the emphasis. Yes, it is true that there are some extraordinary means of salvation, meaning out of the ordinary, that somebody who does live outside the visible bounds of the Catholic Church, that we can't, is in some way a member of the church that God sees and he saves them. But that's putting we're thinking more about God's duty rather than our duty. Our duty is to tell people the ordinary way of salvation. God, it's up to him if he wants to use extraordinary means of salvation for other people. But we should never presume upon that. And so really, if you know somebody who is not a practicing Catholic, not a Catholic, then it's your duty to try to share with them on some level the importance of being Catholic and why they should be a Catholic themselves. And then, but it's not your thing to point to God and say, well, you're going to save them anyway, right? No, that's not, we don't presume upon God's mercy, upon his justice either. We just need to focus on what our duty is, which is to evangelize people of the ordinary way of salvation, which is baptism. It's like if you know the route to a certain location and you know you're guaranteed you can get there, and maybe there's another way to get there, but would you tell somebody, oh, well, you can figure it out on your own? Or would you say, no, here's the way. Here's how you get there. That's where you want to go. Here's the path. Here's the road. Take it. And that's what we need to do. We need to tell people that road to salvation, which is membership in the Catholic Church.
Amen. Eric, I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your busy schedule to spend the hour with us. And again, for our listeners, his name is Eric Sammons. The book is Deadly Indifference, published by Sophia Institute and Crisis Publications. And you want to pick up a copy of this if you want to understand how we got where we are, and more importantly, how we recover. So, Eric, thanks again for being with us. I certainly appreciate it. I know I've learned a lot between the book and our conversation, and I'm sure our listeners have as well.
Thanks so much for having me, Ken. I really appreciate it.
And before I let you go, I should have mentioned, too, Crisis Magazine. So you're the editor-in-chief for folks that are out there. If you're not aware of Crisis Magazine, it's accessible online. Great website. You can get a daily email with the headlines for the current day's articles, or those published in the last 24 hours, I guess. Anything you want to add about Crisis before we let you go?
Yeah, I just encourage people to go to crisismagazine.com. We look at ourselves as kind of like, we're like the op-ed page for the Catholic world, that we try to give commentary on what's going on in the church and in the world today from a Catholic perspective. And we don't try to just say what's wrong with it, you know, that there is a crisis. We actually then try to have our articles also give some ways in which we can move forward, that we can overcome the crisis as well.
Very good. That's what I love, Eric, with the book and Crisis. You may lay out a problem, but you also offer solutions, and that's right. What we need today more than anything. So thanks again, Eric. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. God bless you.
God bless you. So I've been looking forward to the show since Harry passed the book along to me last week. And when I started reading it, it was spot on. I mean, it makes it clear as to how we got where we are, and gives some ideas as to how we can move forward. Because that's why we're here. That's why we're in the Catholic Church. That's why this wonderful Catholic radio apostolate is here, is to save souls. I'm blessed to have had my own soul, at least up till now, saved, and coming back to the faith on fire back in the early 90s. It's led me to meet people like Kathleen and Father McKay and Joe Trainer that's here on Mondays, and so many others in my life today, and gives us an opportunity to not only save our own soul, but to bring others along. You know, Eric mentioned the sacraments, and beginning with baptism, and he said, as laity, you know, obviously we can't bring the sacraments to other people, but we can certainly invite them to come and learn about the sacraments and experience them themselves. So if you're away from the church, now's the time to come back. I look forward to being with you again next Wednesday. And until then, I pray that God will hold you in the palm of his hand. Take care, and God bless.